This Month in Banking is brought to you by the Kafafian Group. TKG has worked with over 500 financial institutions in over 40 states, ranging in asset size from under $100 million to upwards of $50 billion. Our focus is on helping financial institutions perform better by offering products and services in performance measurement, profitability measurement outsourcing, strategic, business, and capital planning, broad-based regulatory and board and management assistance, process improvement, and investment banking and other advisory services. Consider letting us help you perform better. Enjoy the podcast.
Hello, this is Sharon Lorman, and I'd like to welcome you to the August 2021 episode of This Month in Banking, brought to you by the Kafafian Group. Our topic on this episode is data cleansing and data governance. What the heck does that mean? And my co-host today is Jeff Marsico. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Sharon. Good to be here again.
Our guest this month is Kim Snyder, founder and CEO of Clarivis. Hi, Kim. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sharon. Hi, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me today.
So, Kim, before we talk about data cleansing and data governance, could you just give our listeners an overview of Clarivis?
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to do that. So we are a data analytics platform for the community financial institution industry. So basically, what we do is take data from the various core systems as well as ancillary systems that a bank may utilize in its ecosystem. We bring it into our common data model. We cleanse it. We standardize it. We categorize it. And we present it back to the bank in the form of business intelligence so they can quickly and easily make data-driven decisions for their bank and for their customers.
So what do you mean by data cleansing?
Well, data.
Oh boy,
this is supposed to
be a half an hour or less, Sharon.
Well, that's what the topic is.
This is a hot topic, but then marketers did not come up with the name data cleansing and data governance. But it's so critical, I think, for financial institutions that are slow to get out of the gate because they're reticent about their data. But anyway, I take up your time, Kim. Off to your question.
No, it's a great question. So data cleansing, I would talk about it in two different formats, okay? So the first one that I'll say, and the one that Clarivis does, is we bring data in from all the various systems and we cleanse it, meaning we get it in the right format. We try to bring it in its rawest nature possible, so then we can actually extract the value out of the data and present it back to the bank. So, for example, when we created Clarivis, we created this proof of concept, and we started with what I call a fake bank data set that we created in Excel. Every column was formatted beautifully. It was exactly the way we wanted to see it. Well, if you dive into data, the data weeds inside of any of the banking systems today, none of it comes to you that way. So we cleanse it and standardize it from its rawest format to present it back to the bank in a format that makes sense to them for them to ingest it. So that's the first part of data cleansing. The second part, I think, is, Jeff, what you and I are wanting to talk about today, which is banks haven't been great at data governance through the years from the standpoint of how their data is input into their systems and really creating that governance structure around that so we can, again, extract the value out of the data and leverage it to serve our customers better.
Yeah, I think that one thing that banks would have had to do, you know, you think about a customer that they might have onboarded 20 years ago, they couldn't envision having the systems capabilities to use their systems for something other than regulatory compliance or just the basics. And I think that's where some of the issues exist, is we kind of get in that mindset. We don't think about what will we need to know about this customer, this profit center. And we have this issue in our profitability service all the time. Will, our producer, who is knee deep in it, we call it general ledger housekeeping. because we have all of these general ledger accounts that are mismatched in different centers. Some banks might have a real estate center for each office where they have real estate expenses and they got to be crammed together. And I think a lot of the reticence of embarking on a data analytics journey with actionable data is the condition of the bank's actual data now, which gets to that data cleansing issue. And then what will they need this data for in the future, which gets to this data governance issue. So I do think there's a lot of reticence when all of the talking heads and pundits talk about data analytics. And, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, they were talking about big data. And then maybe 1 or 2 years ago, they were talking about small data. All of the reticence is around the fact that banks think their data is kind of junk in at this point in the game.
Yeah, so what I would tell your listeners is that if you wait till your data set is clean, you will never be able to extract the value out of your data. It's just an ongoing process, living, breathing. And so traditionally, banks haven't been in the past that focused on how their data is input into the system. Those decisions are made primarily in the loan operations department or in the deposit operations department, what have you. And you're exactly right. They're not thinking about the business strategy discussion around how do we want to get the data, how do we want to use the data at the end of the day. Case in point, at our bank, when I was a community banker, our chief risk officer used to provide these phenomenal risk management reports to our board on a quarterly basis, and it was an extensive pull for her, extensive work. What she did finally one day is sit down with the loan operations staff and said, here's what I'm presenting to the board, and here's how your data entry matters. This information, you are the one responsible for putting it into the system and see where it's going. It's why I'm you know, that's why she was so pushing on them to make sure that the data was clean going into the system. Once they saw that, the light bulb went off and they were like, oh yeah, that makes sense to me. Now I understand. I'm not just sitting here keying in numbers. This really is meaningful and it's helping us manage our bank better. And so I think taking an approach like that helps on the data governance side as well. But if you wait till your data is clean, you're never going to get started and be able to leverage it for data analytics, predictive analytics, those types of things. You just can't. You have to start somewhere.
I want to get to this bad data and kind of expand on it and the reticence about it. I know, you know, our little slice of the data at our firm is related to the profitability reporting. And I have found that the struggle is real. I mean, one time we had a bank that had all of their deposits in a GL called deposits and all of their loans in a GL called loans that needed to be parsed. But I do believe that there are systems out there, maybe even Clarivis out there, that can make this into much more actionable data than their current GL or their current core or their current ancillary systems would allow, and break down these silos into something that is so meaningful that a bank could take action, you know, that they kind of elevate above the nice to know information. What do you think is the cost of bad data in a financial institution?
So I think it comes in many forms, right? So I would argue bad data is not just poorly input data, okay? It is data that cannot be aggregated in a meaningful manner. It is, right? And if it cannot be aggregated in a meaningful manner, then you cannot make decisions off of it. Therefore, you cannot, you know, serve your customers maybe in the manner that you would like to serve them. I would argue that the high cost of bad data impacts your customer service overall. If you have a bank and your bank has wealth management, has trust, has insurance, in addition to its banking, if you're not leveraging your data as an enterprise-wide asset, and what I mean by that is distributing it, disseminating it throughout your organization in a manner where the people who are serving your frontline customers have the data they need about those customers every day, how do you expect them to serve them? You have the most intimate data about your customers as a financial institution, right? And your customers expect you to know them. And if the people serving your customers can't access the information and do not understand that Jeff also has a wealth management account because that data lives on a separate system, that's a cost of having bad data, in quotes, because the person serving the customer can't access it. That's a major problem inside the financial institution industry today, and it's the one that we are trying to solve.
And in addition, just to add on to that, you have bankers reviewing several, if not dozens, of reports that might have one or two pieces of actionable data in them, but just because it's a canned report that their core provides, and therefore it's easily the keystroke and get at. Or they want a more comprehensive report with actionable data where somebody in the employee base is spending hours upon hours aggregating canned reports into an Excel spreadsheet and then delivering that to the executive team or the board.
Manually, Jeff. Printed report, manually keying in the information because they can't get it any other way.
I just did a speech for the ABA Bank Marketing Conference that talked about a brand value and a brand equity dashboard. And I thought, unless they are able to pull data in from an external source and pull data in from their internal sources, somebody's going to be spreadsheeting. So here I am being part of the problem in suggesting this dashboard.
No, they can have Clarivis, and then they'll have it.
See? I knew we'd get, yeah. That's right. You're always on it, Kim. You're always on it.
There you go.
Kim, how can you be sure that the data cleansing project is successful?
Yeah, so let's back up just a step, Sharon. So one of the things that Clarivis, Jeff, you asked me, you know, in our projects, are we finding a lot of bad data in our clients? And what I would say is that most banks, the data that they have to report from a regulatory perspective is pretty good. It's pretty clean, right? There's not a lot of bad stuff in there because they're having to report on that. Where bad data really comes into play is, I would argue, in a lot of cases, is because the bank cannot access the data from the various ancillary systems. So they could be using a different digital banking platform rather than something through their core system, or let's just use that as an example. And sometimes the digital banking platforms are not passing back the data that they need, that the bank really needs, the actionable insights for their customers to understand how their customers are engaging with them through the digital experience. That's a problem, okay? That's not one I can solve. That's one that the industry as a whole needs to solve. But if I can get that data and I can pull it into Clarivis, and then I can combine it with all the other elements in an automated fashion and present that back to the bank, then that's a home run for everyone involved, including the digital banking company, quite frankly. So that's problem number one. When our banks implement Clarivis, because it's a visualization, they're seeing their data for the first time, Jeff, not in the tabular, linear, cold storage type reports that they've been getting by email, but they're actually seeing the pictures, for lack of a better term. And people typically are able to discern what's happening inside of an organization looking at a visual representation of it rather than linear pages. When they see that, the bad data jumps out at them. If they do have orphaned, you and I, Jeff, talk about orphaned deposit accounts all the time, right? So those deposit accounts that are with an officer who left the bank 10 years ago, well, all of a sudden, when you're showing an officer segmentation of the deposit portfolio and there's an officer's name that hasn't been with the bank for the last 15 years, the CEO says, oh, wow, maybe we do need it. Maybe that is a high priority project. Maybe now, because I can see it in a manner that I couldn't see it before, and I can piece it together in a manner that I couldn't piece it together before, now all of a sudden that becomes a high-value data item that I do want to clean up and prioritize. And so that's how a tool like Clarivis helps banks prioritize that cleanup. And then because we're bringing in daily insights, they're able to see the cleanup immediately and understand the success of the project. Because when that group of orphaned accounts go to the account officer who's now responsible for them, all of a sudden it's there, right? The next day, as soon as the data has been cleaned up. And so that's how our banks are working towards cleaning up any of the bad data elements that they might have inside of their system.
Now we know we have people that are, know we talk about orphaned accounts. So
right.
I think the next time we're together is going to be at the Virginia Bankers. We're going to have Virginia Bankers fleeing from you and I, because all we like to talk about are things like data governance and orphaned accounts. But I always like to think about the ideal here, Kim. Like, so the head of commercial lending should have a P&L for commercial lending to be held accountable for commercial lending. All his or her commercial lenders should have a portfolio, and that portfolio, and obviously profitability is part of what we do, so I focus on that. The profitability of each individual lender's portfolio should feed up into the line of business profitability of commercial. So every time a commercial lender improves the profitability of his or her portfolio, the profitability of the commercial lending department improves. And if you have four different or five different commercial lending products in that line of business, whoever is charged with product management and improving the profitability of that product should also improve the profitability of the commercial lending department. This is what I would consider the ideal in running a financial institution. But one step further, looking at where are our greatest opportunities? Who are our greatest lifetime value customers? Where should we focus the next moment of resources to reach out and bring in a new customer or solidify or deepen our relationship with some existing customer? This should be fingertips data. It should not be pull out of the hair data. Now, if you could see me, unfortunately, we're a podcast and my face was made for podcasts. I'm being very passionate with my hand movements about banks need to do this and not mess around with volumes or, you know, manage their business in some suboptimal way because they can't. They want to get the easiest piece of data. And of course, for commercial lending, the easiest piece of data is volumes.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. So for a lender to be able to go into a system and understand the full attributes, everything that they need to understand about their portfolio, including profitability, is what I say is the ideal. And the same thing on the deposit side, and the same thing as somebody managing the markets and managing, you know, various products and so forth. The only way you get that is by holistically combining the data elements and joining them from all the various systems, how your customers are engaging with you, including the general ledger. Okay, so keep in mind the GL. The dirty GL stuff that you guys are dealing with from a profitability perspective, and I'm an ex-CFO, so I can say dirty GL and say it with credibility because I understand
That's right.
okay. So that's one source of data, but the finance team is putting their GL chart of accounts and their structure together. Typically, it starts with how it has to be reported for call reporting purposes. Okay, that's typically kind of the starting point for finance. What I'm saying is let's not just take the GL. Let's really look at the applications and let's look at the attributes of how your customers are engaging with you. Let's look at their transactions. Let's understand which customers in my portfolio are sending loan payments to my competitor down the street. And let's look at that in an easy-to-see fashion. Furthermore, let's look at the small business customers who are connected to Square. We know Square is going to go after them. So we as financial institutions, we need to be able to get our hands on that data, understand that subset of customers so we can reach out. And I'm talking really fast. I'm sorry. This is my passion.
Okay. See, you're passionate. You're just not Italian and you're not using your hands.
I know. But do you see where I'm going? We have access. Yeah. We have that data. The problem is that the tools until now have not existed really for the banks to be able to get that data in an actionable format in an easy manner. And that's what we're doing at Clarivis, is serving that back up. So if I'm going out, you know, and I want to do, and I encourage all of your listeners to do that exercise, get somebody to tell you who your business customers are that are using Square. Because I guarantee you those customers are getting hit right now from Square to set up a small business checking account with them. Guarantee you they are, because that's what they're doing. And you don't want to lose your business customers' checking accounts to Square. But you've got to have that data insights in order to be able to act.
And this gets to this a little bit of maybe AI and maybe bots, robotic process automation, and well, not more like AI. So, you know, we collect the transaction data, so we know that a customer may be processing merchant transactions via Square because that's in our transaction flow, right? So, you know, ideally we should have something that's saying, show me all of my customers that have Square transactions, you know, in their account, and therefore be able to visualize. I walk in, I turn on my laptop, and it says, you know, out of your 100 commercial customers, 17 of them are on Square, and here's how we're trying to approach this Square challenge in the accounts. Wouldn't that be, I mean, that's like the ideal. That's like the ideal, and it's there.
You're singing my song. The problem is, Jeff, that unless they have a tool like Clarivis, they're not able to get to it easily. It's a manual process for the bank to do. It's somebody digging through those ACH transaction files and doing that in a manual fashion. That's the way that banks are having to do it now, unless they have a platform that is similar to ours that's doing that in an automated fashion and serving that back up. But I'm going to take it a step further. I'm going to tell you not only here's your subset of customers that utilize Square, I'm going to tell you what else they do with you, that holistic view. So you really understand who that customer is. And I can do that because I'm pulling in the disparate data sources all into one place, and I'm combining it, and I'm giving it back to the bank in the form of business intelligence so they can quickly and easily see exactly what you just said.
Well, what about this? A lot of ancillary systems are out there, Kim, that append data to what I would call maybe the core customer file, such as maybe new CECL systems that banks that are implementing CECL, they're appending CECL codes to the customer file, or the big one that I like to talk about is the MCIFs or the CRMs that might append like those psychographic codes that we typically see, like you're an empty nester or a fluent empty nester, et cetera, et cetera. What about all these systems that they append this data exogenous to the core, never to be seen anywhere else but in that ancillary system that does the appending? How do we solve for that?
I feel like, yeah. So that's what Clarivis is solving for, that very thing. So what?
Oh,
I
talked right into it. Like I walked right into it.
You walked right into it, and I don't.
I get no commissions. I get no commissions.
I know. I don't want this to sound like a sales pitch. So I want to be. Yeah. I want to be any tool like Clarivis. Okay. What we're doing, so if a bank uses a CRM, if a bank uses an MCIF, and those systems have appended data, what we want to do is get the data extracts out of those systems, or the data use an API, what have you, out of those systems with the appended information, so we can combine it with the rest of the data that the bank has and from other systems about that customer to provide that 360-degree customer view back. That is exactly the problem. Bankers get frustrated with having to go into multiple systems and try to figure out a way to piece it together, and we're trying to automate that. And there's other tools out there that I'm sure are trying to do the same thing, or that are doing the same thing. But it's much more complicated than I thought it was going to be when I started down this journey. I should say that.
It always is.
Right.
It always is. But I think it's a lot of it is stymieing banks from advancing. Ideally, if we walked into a strategic planning session with a financial institution, and Sharon and I are going out next week to Cape Cod, but we're going out there next week, and ideally we'd say, tell us your top five commercial profiles, top five lifetime value commercial profiles that you have at the bank and are ample in your markets. Tell us the top five retail customer profiles that you have that have the greatest lifetime value, and virtually no financial institution, and I bet you if I walked into Bank of America, they still wouldn't have that information. So ideally you'd say, you know, we need to focus on these customer cohorts because they have the greatest lifetime value at our bank and are in ample supply in our markets. Therefore, let's fashion our strategy around them. But we're kind of relegated to anecdotes or available data to be able to determine who those customers are. We could do it more precisely, can't we?
Yeah, we can. What they're doing today, they're going to tell you, they're going to give you an answer for that, but it's on their gut. It's on their gut and just their interactions. It's not going to be necessarily data driven. And so what would be great is, can we support their gut with true data insights that either support or don't support? It'd be nice if we knew that, right? What their theory is about that. But most lenders, especially at the community financial institutions, they know their markets. They know their ideal customer profile. I mean, they know that. Where I think the rubber meets the road is if that customer goes into the branch and so they're not dealing with a lender, they're dealing with somebody who doesn't deal with them on a day-to-day basis. That person doesn't know unless they have the data in front of them in an easy manner that they can understand. Oh, there's Jeff coming in. He did a loan with us last week. He's so-and-so's customer. They can see that very quickly and easily, and he's got a mortgage, and he's got this, and he's got that with us. That's where that whole easy dissemination of data is really, really important, and making sure it's in the hands of everybody who's serving your customers, not in a silo.
Or here comes Jeff, and he eats our cookies and drinks our coffee, but he delivers no profits to the bank.
There you go. Ducking. So we can just ignore him.
Well, no, practically, the practical part of that is that the branch manager could focus on maybe higher priority customers, and other branch employees could handle Jeff that's coming in that delivers virtually no profits and eats the cookies and drinks the coffee.
Yeah, I actually had one of our clients talk to me the other day, and we're working on a wealth management integration for them, and they're just ecstatic about it because they said, we have customers who come into our branches, and they may have, you know, $3,000-$4,000 sitting in their checking account, but they could have $2 million with us in wealth. And the teller on the front line has no idea of that. Now, should they treat that customer differently than they treat Jeff? No. But we're all human, and we might do it anyway, right? And so, again, not having that 360-degree view of really your customer and how they're engaging with you is a problematic. And also, I think your point about creating those customer profiles about the lifetime value, right? So we do know what our niche is, and it's not based on gut. It's based on actionable intelligence, so we can create our strategies around it. All of that is why people are talking about data and data analytics in the financial institutions industry. The problem is it's a complex problem. It is very complex, and what we're trying to do is simplify it.
So I do think that banks need to stop hesitancy on getting moving with their data governance and their data cleanup and then utilizing data, because I think there's a tremendous amount of inefficiencies and wasted resources on ineffective use of data. And we've tolerated that for so long because we never envisioned what good data could do for us. What could it do in terms of reducing the amount of support resources required to generate reports, to reconcile accounts, to manage accountabilities, and then also on the external, the marketing or the customer-facing employees, who should we focus our greatest attentions on, our limited resources on, that are delivering the greatest value to the financial institution? It allows us to distinguish ourselves because we can become better at serving those customer cohorts. I think we can't wait any longer if we want to slow down that 4% culling of our industry per year to make sure that our financial institutions remain relevant and thrive going forward.
I could not agree with you more, Jeff. 100% spot on there. It has, and again, everybody's talking about it today. And they're open up any magazine in the financial institution industry, and they're talking about utilizing your data. You know, it has to start with a culture at the very top in order for it to be integrated, you know, throughout the organization. So from a data governance perspective, really, the leaders of the organization, the senior leadership team, have got to embrace data. And what I mean by that is you've got to break down the silos. Traditionally, data has been governed by maybe the IT department or one or two power users that are report writers, you know, inside of an organization. And you've got to break that down. And the only way to break down those types of silos is for it to come from the top and filter its way down through the organization. So that's where I would start from a data governance perspective. If you're
The second most powerful person in a financial institution is the subject matter expert on crystal report writing.
The report writer. It absolutely is.
The two people in the institution that can do it.
Yep. You're exactly right.
That person should hold out for a raise.
Uh-huh.
Before we wrap up, what should our audience consider a takeaway from our discussion? Can you give us some to-dos?
Yeah, so I think it really does start at the top with strategy. So I know you guys are doing, y'all have a great line of business in the strategic planning world, and I think a great to-do is if data analytics is on your strategic plan or on your strategic roadmap, talk about, you know, that. Understand it's a journey. It's not a destination. It's going to be, you know, long-term going, but it has to be embraced at the top, just like I mentioned. So that's takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is don't wait until your data is clean to start this journey, because it's never going to be clean. Don't wait. So start now. Find a partner if you want to partner up with somebody to help you with this journey. I personally, one of my biggest frustrations as a banker with our core providers is that they expect you to be data experts. They expect you to be able to join the data. Bankers don't traditionally, that's not a role traditionally bankers play, right? So find, and those people are hard to come by in our industry. So find a partner who can help you with the journey as far as the aggregation of your data sources. Identify where your high value data items live. They could be in the core system. They could be in your digital system. They could be in your wealth system. Cut through the noise. You don't need 100% of your data. You need your high value. What are the things that are going to help you drive business value? Start there. Don't try to do it all. start there and then work your way down.
That sounds like something that one consulting friend of mine said, that we do things that every bank should do, but bankers shouldn't do.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I mean, and that's how I feel, you know, about what we're doing at Claris. I mean, we are a team of bankers that have some great technology folks on our team that are executing our vision. But trying to do this inside of a bank is tough, because you've got your bank to run. You've got your normal everyday business to do and take care of your customers. And as I said, this is not easy. It is a long-term investment that you're going to have to make in your future, essentially, to create that competitive advantage that Jeff was talking about.
And Kim, I think before Sharon wraps up, I think congratulations are in order. You and your husband are now grandparents, aren't you?
We are. Thank you. Yes, our first grandchild and our first little girl. So we have three boys, and yes, one of our sons just had a little girl, or his wife had a little girl. So we're super excited. Sloan is her name, and she's beautiful.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, well, this completes our podcast for today. Thank you, Kim, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Jeff, I look forward to seeing you soon.
At VBA.
Thank you also to Jeff Marsico and, of course, our great producer, Will Ball. We will upload the next episode of This Month in Banking on the last Wednesday in September, September 29th. Of course, if you'd like to provide feedback on this podcast or any others, please email me at slorman@kafafiangroup.com. You can also reach us via our website, kafafiangroup.com. Thanks for listening. Please have a safe, healthy, and profitable month.